Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If, however, this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. Every profession needs its heroes, the people who have the courage to challenge convention, drive outstanding achievement, and give the discipline a noble name. In this episode, we'll be speaking to one such hero in depth, learn about what they do, how they've got here, and a bit about what's made them who they are today. Are you listening comfortably? Then we'll begin. I'm delighted to be joined today by positioning consultant, speaker, and author, April Dunford. April, welcome to our podcast.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's so good to have you here. So you should explain for our listeners, where are we finding you today?
You're finding me in my office in lovely Toronto, Canada. Yeah, that's where I'm based.
It's a beautiful office. It looks very, I can see bookshelves that are well organized in the background.
Oh, you think so?
I think so.
It's a bit of a mess. Sometimes I get on Zoom calls and, you know, I'm not used to looking behind me. And then you get on Zoom call and you're like, wow, it's a mess back there. I should tidy up.
So I find with my bookcases, though, they kind of very quickly get rammed with lots and lots of books. I'm loath to kind of take some out because, you know, I love all of the books that I've got collected together. Whereas it looks like you've got space there.
There's a little space there. Yeah. I did a big clean out at one point. And things were kind of empty back there, but it's slowly filling back up. But you're right. The books expand to the space that you have on the bookshelf.
Very, very definitely. I mentioned up front that you are a positioning consultant. So I've got to ask you the question up front as we start this. What is a positioning consultant, April?
Oh, you know, it's a good question. When I started consulting, it is kind of hilarious, but people would say, well, what do you do? And I'd say, I'm a positioning consultant. They're like, that's great. What's positioning?
It's not about the arrangement of the books behind you, is it?
Yeah. So no, it's not about that. So positioning is kind of a fundamental marketing concept. And so for 25 years, I was a vice president of marketing at a series of successful tech companies. And then when I made the switch to consulting, I decided I wanted to focus specifically on positioning for a few reasons. One, because it's not very well understood. And two, it's actually quite hard to do positioning. It's one of the few places where I really wish that I had some outside help back when I was a VP marketing. So I thought this would be a good thing to focus on. So how I define positioning is like this. So positioning defines how your product is the best in the world at delivering some kind of value that a well-defined set of customers cares a lot about. Now, that's a big mouthful of a definition, but really what we're doing in positioning work is we're getting really tight around the definition of who exactly do we compete with in the market? How are we different? What is the value that we can deliver for customers that the other alternatives can't? What customers really care a lot about that? So, you know, what is my definition of a really good fit customer? And then lastly, what's the market category that I'm positioning myself in, which is kind of like answering the question, what are we? Are we email or are we chat? Are we a database or are we a business intelligence tool? It's a bit like saying, this is the market that we intend to win. So positioning is all about getting really tight and getting agreement and alignment across the team on all those things.
And what types of role, first of all, are coming to you about that? Are you finding that it's kind of CMOs who are coming to you seeking that help, or is it from outside of marketing?
Yeah, it's interesting. A bit of it depends on the size of the company. Right. So a lot of the companies that I'm working with are what I would call growth stage startups. So they're somewhere between 10 and 80 million revenue, let's say. And in that range, generally the person coming to me is the CEO.
Right.
And so they're struggling with, you know, they'll come to me and say, I know how to tell the story. When I tell the story, it works. But for some reason, it doesn't translate when the salespeople tell it. And what I see in my marketing doesn't look like that. And when I'm talking to my product people, it seems like we're not all on the same page about, you know, what we are and what we aren't. So a lot of times I'll get that. In really large companies, often it's the CMO or occasionally it's the head of product or the head of product marketing comes to me and they know what positioning is. They've been wrestling with it for a while. And what they want is the help of someone from the outside to help facilitate an exercise to get the entire executive team aligned around a particular position.
And I'm interested in how the activity supports businesses, because I'm imagining with those two quite different audiences, with the CEOs, what you kind of mentioned, the sales challenge. So I'm guessing that, you know, it's business development meetings and sales that are top of mind, whereas maybe for the CMO, it's seen as being a kind of pure part of the marketing strategy and brand.
Yeah. The crazy thing about positioning is it actually impacts everything. Like it impacts everything across the company. It'll definitely impact sales in the way that the CEO is often thinking about it. Like, how are we pitching this to customers that don't know too much about us, but they're in our pipeline? And so how do we do the best possible job of explaining, you know, here's what we are, here's why we're different, here's why we're a perfect fit for you. But if you think about it, in marketing's role, particularly when we're doing lead generation, we've got to be telling a consistent story all the way across the pipeline. You know, people should be set up with their expectations before they get to sales. And a lot of that is marketing's job to set those expectations. But interestingly, if you think about positioning, it also impacts things like, what's the product roadmap for this look like? Are we actually building the things that reinforce this positioning, or are we building things that actually chip away at this positioning? So this is why when we do this work, we tend to do it with a cross-functional team, because what I really want is agreement and alignment across the major functions of the organization, so that marketing, sales, product, the executive team are all kind of telling the same story about this product that we're trying to sell.
And is the approach that you take in order to do that consistent across all of those different types of organization and all of those different types of, client? Or are you finding that you're having to position your positioning differently in different businesses?
So here's what's, this has actually been very surprising to me. When I started consulting, like, I was working for companies that looked like the companies that I had worked for when I was a VP marketing. So when I was a VP marketing, I worked for companies that were fairly startups, tech startups that were fairly early stage. So around Series A, Series B, if they were venture backed, like generally less than 20 million in there. And then I guess as I became more known as a consultant, or, you know, maybe it's just that positioning is kind of hot right now, I started getting calls from bigger and bigger companies. And at the beginning, I just sort of said, look, there's only one thing I do here. We do a facilitated workshop. Here's how it works. I think it'd work for you, but I don't really know. And so I'd start doing bigger and bigger clients. And it's surprising to me how consistent it is.
Okay. So
the offering that I have is fairly consistent, whether you're, you know, a little tech startup or you're a big, big multinational billions of revenue company. The engagement looks fairly similar. There's a handful of things that will change. And we kind of play it by ear between me and the company, whether we need this. Sometimes if it's a really big, complicated suite of products, we'll need a little extra time to get alignment across the team. And in particular, there's things we can do around market category, if we're a bigger company, that we can't get away with if we're a smaller company. So if you come to me and you're Google, we could make up a new market category and smash that actually, because we have all the resources and time and credibility in the market to do that. If you come to me and you're a 10 million revenue company, we're somewhat limited in what we can do around market category. It's not that we can't make up a new market category there too. We can, but we're limited into how far we could stretch that potentially. So that piece of the exercise will take less time. If you're dealing with someone like, you know, like IBM, then, you know, the world's our oyster a little bit here. I mean, we could get really creative and stretch this. And so there's a lot more directions that we could analyze and think about when we get to that market category step. But other than that, the engagement really looks very similar between a big company and small company.
And as you talk about this, April, your passion really comes across, I think. So I'm interested in what you clearly enjoy your job. What is it that you enjoy about it? What are the specific things that kind of really make you want to get out of bed in the morning and be a positioning consultant?
Well, there's a couple of things. So one is, most of the companies that come to me, I mean, they're well on their way. They're not like a little startup that's still trying to figure out, is this product anything that anybody wants? You know, are we actually going to survive or fail? They're well past that. So they've got something and it's awesome because people are out there buying it and it's hard to sell stuff and our markets are all crowded. But they're not necessarily telling the best story they could tell around it to actually get customers to click into why is this so cool?
Yeah.
And so in the work I do with companies, you can see it kind of gel across the course of the workshop. So at the beginning, there'll be a lot of tension in the room. And it's generally because sales sees this slightly differently than marketing. Some folks on the executive team, there might be conflict between the way they're looking at things and the way products looking at things. And you can see it start to kind of come together. And then the thing we do at the very end is, so we'll work through the component pieces of positioning. And then at the end, we'll work through building a story around that. Like if I was sitting across the table from a good fit prospect, I'm going to pitch it to you. Here's how we'd tell the story. And that last bit is super satisfying because we'll start with this thing where, you know, there's a lot of conflict and we all kind of see it differently and whatever. And by the time we get to the end, there's this really crisp story. It's not complicated. It's clean. It's a nice little sales pitch. Like normally where we get to on the end, I feel like, you know, if you came to me and said, and held a gun to my head and said, April, you got to sell 5 or 6 of these things by the end of the week, or we're all dead. Like most of the time we get to the end of this workshop at the end, I think I could sell this. If you came and hired me as a sales rep and that was it, you know, I'd be like, I could sell this, even though I know nothing about cybersecurity or whatever it is you happen to be selling. So that's kind of cool for me. I like these things. And a lot of my clients do really complicated, deep technical things. And so I like this idea of taking something that at the beginning looks very complex, very undifferentiated, very difficult to sell, and then getting it down to this story that's like, you know, anybody, even somebody outside of the industry, could kind of walk up and say, here's what it is. Here's what it's super exciting. It does this thing. People like you actually really need this thing. And it's a legitimate, authentic pitch that I think is going to work. So that I think is really cool.
And you mentioned the kind of incredible career that you've had just to get to this place, right? So maybe you could take us through just some of the headlines about, well, how is it that you got here? And you know, what are the key steps in that journey for you?
Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't a real planned thing. Let's put it that way. I think if I went back and had a conversation with my younger self at the beginning of university and said, hey, when you're an old lady, this is where you're going to be. I'd have said, what? How did that happen? But I studied engineering in my undergrad in university. And when I came out, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And I just kind of landed at a startup just by accident. And by even more accident, I ended up in the marketing department, which sounds like a weird fit, but it actually wasn't at the time. So I got hired to do a job. They called it product marketing, which is kind of, now that's a very common role. Back then, that was really rare. But I got hired for a bunch of reasons. One, the company itself was selling a very technical product. So it was a database product. And so it was a very technical product sold to very technical people. Product marketing's job, you know, I had a bunch of things on my plate, but a bunch of the things I had on my plate were around helping the salespeople sell. And so part of my job was to be an expert on the product and to help the salespeople understand how do we pitch all this new whiz bang, really technical stuff. So I sort of landed that job because I had the technical side of things. And then one of the requirements was you needed to be able to do a lot of public speaking, like at trade shows and things like that. And I was okay with that. And there's not that many techie people, I guess, that aren't scared of speaking. But anyway, so I got that job. And then and we did this big repositioning in there that was really successful. The company ended up getting acquired by a big, big company in Silicon Valley. Fast forward a little bit, my boss left and I was kind of in the right place at the right time. And they put me in charge of the marketing department, which is hysterical because I have an engineering degree. I can't use film marketing. So here I am, I'm in charge of the marketing department. I'm a big fraud. I'm like, what am I doing here? But that kind of motivated me to really double down on my self-study of marketing. So I took a bunch of courses. I read a lot of books. And we did really well. Like I also had an amazing team that I inherited, it's mainly credit to them, but we were pretty successful. And after that, I thought, okay, this is my jam. I'm the VP marketing. This is what I do. And so after I left there, I went to another startup. I was the VP marketing there. We were also super successful. And then we got acquired and I did this jump into the startup, be the VP, do some positioning stuff, usually grow the revenue, get acquired. And I did that rinse and repeat 7 times. And so 6 of them were acquired. And after the last one, you know, I'd been doing this for 25 years at this point. So after the last one, I was kind of like, are we doing another one of these April or are we going to do something different? And at that point I thought, you know what, this is a good point in my career to maybe shift gears and think about doing something that's not just that role, which gave me the idea, well, maybe I'll go do consulting. I spent a couple of years kind of working on, you know, what exactly is the offering and how do I do this positioning stuff as a consulting project rather than as a VP? So it took me a while to figure it out. But now that I'm here, it's awesome. It wasn't a straight ahead journey. It was a bit of a weird winding road, but here we are.
As you moved into that positioning role specifically for your consulting, have you found that actually the nature of positioning has changed over that time? Is positioning in 2021 different to how it was in 2018?
I don't actually think it is. Like if I think about how we were doing positioning in my very first company, which is a lot of years ago, I don't actually think the nature of it changes that much. I think that the way we express positioning out to the market changes a lot. In marketing, the tactics are constantly shifting. But the strategic underpinning of what we're doing, how do we get to a tight definition of positioning, I don't feel like that changes, nor do I feel like the components of positioning change. Like it's the same inputs to our marketing plan, regardless of how we're actually going to execute on that marketing plan. And that execution piece changes a lot. but we still need to understand who's our target buyer, what's our differentiated value, what market category are we intending to win. Those concepts are fairly bedrock. Like it's kind of the foundation that we build the house on. The house, you know, styles on building the house change all the time, but the foundation's still the foundation. It's still kind of the same. I don't think it's changed at all.
And how about if we turn that to being future facing, where does positioning go next?
Well, you know, I think that one thing, and then this is what my work is really focused on, is the biggest change I've seen in marketing over my career is at the beginning, if you looked at the way we were doing stuff, a lot of it was just gut feel. Like, you know, we kind of made stuff up. And, you know, we agreed on things conceptually, but then how we got stuff done was a lot of loosey-goosey kind of feeling my way through it. And that drove me absolutely bananas at the beginning of my career. And so my work has really been focused on how do we actually do positioning? Like we talk about positioning conceptually, we understand what it is, but we should be able to have a methodology to get this done, like a step one, step two, step three. So my work has really been focused on that. And so I see a lot of that happening in marketing, that things that we used to just gut feel around, or people would say, why do we do this? You say, well, just because it works. Don't ask me how. Like we've certainly gotten much more into metrics and measurement and repeatable processes on things in marketing than we had when I started. And so if I look into the future of marketing, like my work has really been around how do we codify and build a methodology that works. My stuff is really focused on B2B tech companies. It's surprising to me that there isn't more out there around, well, okay, if I was doing this for a consumer brand, I assume this would be a little bit different the way I would get this done, because I think there's different things to consider.
Yeah.
I don't touch consumer at all. I would assume if we're looking at the future of positioning, there's going to be a lot more sort of thinking around methodologies and how do we get this done and what are the steps and how is that different between business and consumer? How is that different for a tech product versus something that's not a tech product? Like I have my own little space that I'm working in, but if I think, you know, if I fast forward 10 years, I would expect there's a lot more of this stuff. And it wouldn't just be me out there saying, hey, here's a way to do it if you happen to be a B2B tech company.
So it's more consistent and therefore more efficient and more effective.
Right. Repeatable.
Less agile.
Well, you know, I actually think that just making shit up is not very agile, really. this is exactly why this drove me crazy at the beginning. Like if you looked at how I was doing positioning and even any other vice president of marketing that I looked at, we kind of came up with a positioning thesis and we would, you know, sort of make that up, but we'd have a thesis and then we'd have to go out in the market and test it. Well, if we're B2B, that test takes some time because the sales cycles are long, even the cycle to get a lead in is long. So a test is kind of long for me to test it and really see if it works. So I was very frustrated with that in that I would come up with this candidate positioning, but then it would take us 3-4 months to test it. And if I was wrong, I had to go all the way back to the beginning and start again. And, you know, if you're the vice president of marketing, like you're going to get fired if this takes too long because your CEO is looking at you going, TikTok, man, we need the leads and we need them now. And so that drove me crazy. And I felt like if I had a good process for doing this, one, my first guess at it would be better and much more likely to be successful. And then two, I could get to that candidate positioning really fast because I'm following the process instead of just kind of monkeying around and making it up. So I actually feel like the stuff I'm doing is a lot more agile now than it was if I rolled back to, you know, what we did before. The other thing is that a lot of companies are coming to me and they've done that and they've done 3 or 4 iterations on that and their iterations aren't getting them closer to where they need to be because they're making it up. If we have a methodology, then at least if I get a candidate and it proves like, oh, it turns out we were wrong on that. We know why it's wrong, because yes. We know here's the list of baked in assumptions we baked in. It turns out this assumption wasn't good. So now we can go back and rework it quickly. And we're guaranteed that the next iteration of this is going to get it closer. Whereas if we're just making it up, well, you know, it doesn't work. We don't know why it doesn't work. We're back to the drawing board, just as clueless as okay. We were before we did the first one.
You've convinced me. let me take you to a desert island now, April. And so on that desert island you're allowed one business marketing book, you're allowed one business marketing website or one business marketing model that you can live your life by. What is it?
Well, you know, you're catching me at a bit of a weird time, because right now, so I've done all this work thinking about positioning and how, you know, build a methodology for positioning and how do we get to positioning. Lately, though, in the last year or so, I've been really thinking about how do we translate that positioning into a story that works for marketing and sales, and how do we actually build a sales narrative? And so I've been really kind of obsessed with how do we build a sales narrative? What do we know about what works and doesn't work in a sales narrative in particular? How does a sales narrative differ from what we're doing when we raise money, for example, like a narrative for investors? So I've been really thinking about this. And the book that I've come back to a lot while I've been kind of working on this is The Challenger Sale, and the companion book, which is The Challenger Customer. And I feel like that book is, one, deeply misunderstood, particularly now in hindsight, you know, because that book's been around for 10 years. If I look back at that book and I hear people talk about, well, we don't like Challenger Sale because of XYZ, I think a lot of what those folks were trying to do in that book is misunderstood, is one thing. And then two, I really felt like that book was written for a particular kind of situation. Like it was written for big brands selling big, like high dollar value deals.
Yeah.
Where you really have to change a customer's mind from what they're doing today to do something else, or else you can't even get started in a deal. So I've been coming back to that book a lot lately. And so if it was Desert Island book time, I think that's the book that would likely make it in there, because I think I've come back to that book like three times in the last week. It's so full of juicy nuggets, and it's got all this neat research that I've not seen anywhere else. It's data backed. They're not just making stuff up. That's what's so great about it. And so anyways, that book I feel like is kind of underappreciated genius that deserves a relook right
worth
now.
Worth a revisit.
Yeah.
And of course, you've written a book as well. So if people are interested in what you've been saying on the subject of positioning, there's a great opportunity to follow up. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So the book is called Obviously Awesome, How to Nail Product Positioning So Customers Get It, Buy It, Love It. I wrote the book a couple of years ago as a way of kind of getting the methodology down in a book form. Like it was too long to do in a blog post. I thought I'd just write a blog post, but then it got too long to do in a blog post. And I wanted the book for a couple of reasons. One, I was getting smaller companies come to me that could afford to hire me as a consultant. Like they're barely paying themselves, you know, they're early stages of their journey. And so I do a lot of coffee meetings with CEOs like that, just to, you know, let's see what we can get done in an hour. But I always wished I could just point them at a blog post or something written and say, read this, and this explains what I'm talking about here. So I thought the book would be good for that. And instead of having 9,000 coffee meetings, I could just slide that book across and say, here it is, everything I know written down, go nuts. And I thought that companies like that could use the book as a guidebook and do it themselves. They wouldn't need me. The second thing that I thought the book would be interesting for is, you know, in my own consulting business, like companies would come and I'd say, well, I have this methodology and whatever. And they're like, well, what's your methodology look like? And I'd have to explain it. And so I thought, well, a book would be a good way for someone who's thinking about working with me, you know, especially if the book's not too long, and it isn't. You can read the thing and you either believe my methodology or you don't. But this is what I'm going to do for you. You could just read that. And at the end of it, you know, decide for yourself whether you think this would work for your company or not. So I thought it would be good for the business, too, in that maybe I do a lot less upfront qualification calls. People could self-qualify, read the book, and then make up their own mind whether they want to work with me. And so the book's been great for both of those things.
And it's a great book. I know a lot of marketers, myself included, really kind of swear by it. So I've read that and the Challenger Sale, and I have to say I put yours somewhat ahead, but but I take your guidance on the Challenger Sale as well, and maybe I'll revisit.
Well, that's a compliment. Thank you.
April, thank you so much for talking to us today. It's really great to see you.
It's so great to be here. Thanks a lot for having me on.
All the very best. Take care.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, April Dunsford, and thanks to our technical man from Through the Eye of Andrew Gratian. Thanks, though, most of all, to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.